This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Backstage with a golden embrace. Tales from the stands to the batter's cage. The kind of stories that'll keep you engaged.
Backstage with a golden embrace. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Philly's Backstage. I'm Tom Burgoyne, joined by John Brazier. Hello, John.
Tom, how you doing?
We have another legend with us this year.
You know, it's funny. Our guest, Steve Bedrosian, we're about to bring on. We haven't met him, but we feel like we know him because Video Dan Stevenson has told us so many stories over the years that it'll be like, you know, right in our living room.
It's true. Yeah, Steve.
Some of them you can't say on the air.
Exactly.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing well. Good to be here with you guys.
Yeah, we between Debbie Nacido, your birthday buddy, she says hello, and then
Larry Anderson.
Well, Larry, of course. Actually, we had Milt Thompson was our guest 2 weeks ago. Both John and I called Video today just to say, hey, you got to give us some Bedrock stories. And Video is, you know, he's still employed by the Phillies for a reason. He knows, you know, the stories he can tell and the ones that he can't.
He is the man.
And, you know, you're certainly have been back kind of in the news, I guess, in a way here in Philadelphia because your son Cam is pitching for the Phillies.
That is correct. They got a big series starting tonight here in Atlanta, you know, trailing by 2 games, and it's coming down to the last 6 games, and this is where it's where you separate, and, you know, the bottom line is you got to win.
So he was with the Reds and the A's this year, and then he became a free agent. Did you have any influence on steering him towards Philadelphia?
I did not. I stay out of his way and let him do the work. You know, he's had quite a year. He's been on 5 different teams, if you call the 2 AAA teams in between. But, yeah, he made the team out of spring training with the Reds, and he was let go, picked up by Oakland. Went to Las Vegas, pitched there a little bit, got called up to Oakland, was let go by them. And didn't pitch really that bad. It's just a lot of different influences involved with contract and days and stuff like that. And then picked up by Philadelphia, pitched in Lehigh Valley for a while, and then in September they called him up in hopes to help the team achieve that playoff goal in the end.
Yeah, he must be fired up to be, you know, in the middle of a playoff run. Do you get a chance to see him pitch much, Steve?
We did. We went to Lehigh Valley and went to Cincinnati. We saw him pitch, and we were going to go to Philly, but things got kind of hairy again, and we had grandbabies coming, and we ended up not going. But we see him, of course, every night on the tube, and, you know, we're with him in spirit, and you know, he knows what he's got to do, and hopefully he can contribute, and all the guys can do what they do. And I know guys are tired. I know they're banged up, but this is the time of year where, you know, you just got to step up and gut it out and get after it.
And he's had a nice career. I mean, could you see his talent early on?
I did. I'm gonna be honest with you. I saw it early as I've coached all my boys. I came after I retired in 95. I coached them all in high school, and he's the youngest of 4 boys, and he just had a good arm. He caught, he pitched, he could play anywhere, and he's actually a really good catcher. And, you know, things started, you know, when you get to high school, you become a pitcher only, and that's what he did. And then he was drafted by the Angels first round. Actually, the Angels had 3 number 1 draft picks that year. That was 2010. Caleb Cowart out of South Georgia, Adel, Georgia. Cam out of Coweta County here. And then Chevy Clark, Chevy Clark out of the Marietta area, three number one picks, because I guess one was a supplement, but three Georgia kids went number one, and Cam hung in there and had a good career with the Angels, and then, you know, as most people do, move on, and he's just trying to, you know, play as long as he can.
Well, Steve, let's talk about your career. You grew up in Massachusetts.
Right.
And I'm an ice hockey player growing up. Did you ever play ice hockey up in Massachusetts?
I sure did. We grew up playing on lakes, shoveling off the snow and making our own goals and nets. And I remember when we played so young, nobody could lift the puck yet. No one could lift it. So the goalie played on his hands and knees with just a regular stick, and he could stop anything anybody shot because nobody could lift the puck. But then as soon as we learned how to lift, boy, that goalie got up off the ice real quick.
Yeah, I remember the first kid that could lift a puck when I was, you know, I started at Mites, and there was a kid named Stu Geisel, and we all looked at him like, oh, my God, this guy can actually lift a puck. We can't. So that's great.
Yeah, so it makes a difference. But, yeah, big hockey fan, Bruins, growing up.
So Bobby Orr and
Boston
all those guys.
Boston Patriots, actually, when I was a kid, it was the Boston Patriots before they became New England. They played at Holy Cross Field, and of course the Celtics were legends back then, always battling the Sixers and the Flyers and the Bruins. And so, yeah, I grew up a big Boston fan and played hockey, and we enjoyed playing it. And, you know, we would rent ice at 2, 3 in the morning. You know, you'd pay $50 an hour to rent the ice at a local, you know, hockey arena. And, you know, it was a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. And, of course, that was the end of that once baseball started getting a little bit more interesting.
Well, yeah, exactly. You dropped the hockey stick for a bat and a ball. I guess the Red Sox, too. I mean, you know, they were so awesome there in the mid-70s. You must have been a huge fan.
I was. As a matter of fact, my hero growing up, a lot of people was Kaius Schramsky or Jim Lomborg, all great players. But my guy, for some reason, was Rico Petrocelli. I loved Rico, and he could play third or short. And, you know, that team back then, when they lost to the Big Red Machine, of course, to Bob Gibson and that St. Louis Cardinals team, we got our hearts broken quite a few times. Our grapes crushed quite a few times. And, you know, they certainly turned it around later on. But I was glad to see Bill Buckner got off the hook after that play at first base.
Yes, he did. He did.
And that was an exciting team. You had Louis Tiant.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You had Fred Lynn. I mean, that was a fun
Fisk.
Team. Carlton Fisk.
Spaceman Lee. George Scott. Joe Foy. You had a great outfield with Evans, Lynn, and Yastrzemski. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun as a kid going in watching games at Fenway, you know, and field trips with the school and church and all that. We always went to Red Sox games, and it was always a thrill to get a Fenway Frank to put some Gouldens mustard on it.
And then you must have been making your way through Little League, throwing, you know, throwing hard, I guess. I mean, you went to the University of New Haven, but when were you finding your groove as a player?
You know what? It was one specific day. I went to, played Little League, played Babe Ruth, played Legion Ball, went to Northern Essex Community College in Haverhill, Mass. Wasn't very good. And I made the Junior College All-Star team in 1978 because somebody got sick and they picked me as an alternate. Went down to McCoy Stadium in Rhode Island. And they couldn't pronounce my name, didn't know who I was. And the coach was trying to say my name, and he couldn't. He goes, you got the seventh. I picked my glove up off the bench, bolted down the bullpen, and pitched the last three innings and struck out 7 out of 9 with just a fastball. I never had a breaking ball. Till the day I got drafted, all I threw was fastballs. And I got a full ride to New Haven. We went to the College World Series, drafted first pick, third round. 1978. Horner was number one with the Braves.
Yeah.
Matt Sinatra, catcher out of Hartford, was number two, and I was third. And finally, you know, went through the ranks in Kingsport, Tennessee, rookie ball, Greenwood, South Carolina, A ball, Savannah, double A, Richmond, triple A. Matter of fact, the strike in 81, Ted Turner came down and they televised our games in Richmond. And it was kind of good to get some exposure there. But then got called up in 81 and went up and made the team in 82. That's when Torrey came over and became the manager, and won the division that year and, you know, tried to hang on as long as I could.
Now, I guess at some point along the way, you learned how to throw a breaking ball somewhere in there.
A guy I went to college with, Dave Tazzo, he actually showed me
there you go.
A slider grip.
Uh-huh.
And I tinkered with it through the minor leagues, and it finally started clicking. And once you can throw that pitch with confidence and throw it for a strike on a 2-0 count, 3-1 count, when they're looking gas, and you can get a guy to roll it over or pop it up or strike out, you've made a great stride in pitching. And that's what happened in Double-A. I remember I threw a 3-1 slider to a guy named Drungo Hazewood, big old donkey home run hitter, and he rolled it over to third double play. And that's when I figured out I can do this. I can pitch next level.
Yeah.
And things started happening.
Well, so you were a starter, if I'm not mistaken. You were a starter with the Braves. And then when you got traded to the Phillies before the 86 season, you converted to a reliever. Was that by your choice, or was that somebody recommended that you would be, you know, more suited for the bullpen?
Actually, that was a Joe Torre move. Actually, I started all through minor leagues, and he was the Mets manager when I first came up. And I guess he saw the kind of arm I had, and with fastball slider, it's kind of hard to go a long way with that. And some guys can do it, but I just found my niche as a reliever, and he's the one who actually started doing that. And then the Phillies traded for me. I remember on my birthday, they gave me the call. We were having dinner here with Bruce Sutter. My wife and him and his wife had dinner together. And I got home, and it was on my answering machine that I'd been traded to the Phillies. It was Bobby Cox saying, "We've traded your contract to the Phillies. Wish you luck. Thanks for everything." And then the next message, beep, was Bill Giles welcoming me to the Phillies.
Wow.
And, you know, we just, you know, your first trade's always kind of, oh, well, okay, well, didn't expect that. But you roll with it, and you go do what you got to do. Went to Philly, slow start. Got traded for a very popular catcher, Ozzie Virgil, and I started slow. And the fans, you know, the fans are tough in Philly, and they should be. They expect good things, and they showered me with booze. And it's still April, May, you know, and then things started warming up, and I started putting things together, and everything got a little bit better after that. But, I was a notorious slow starter in the spring, and once it gets going, though, it's good things happen.
So was Teek the closer your first year of the Phillies?
No, I was.
Oh, you were the closer, right?
I was the closer.
That's right. Then Teek
was the closer in 86. Teek was a setup guy, and I got to play with Lefty and Schmitty, those guys, and Gary Maddox and Kevin Gross and Raleigh. They were starters. It was a long time ago. I'm trying to recall names now. Charles Hudson, you remember that name?
Yeah, Charles Hudson,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you had our buddy Larry Ruffin. Anderson. Larry Anderson in the bullpen.
Larry
with
Anderson,
you.
One of the best in the game. Larry and some of the guys down in the bullpen. Well, Teek just had it was great to come in behind him. You know, he was a sidewinder, could wear out right-handers. And, you know, Teek did a great job in setting me up, especially that 87 year when I won the Cy Young. And then, obviously I got traded away in 89.
Yeah, Teek, you know, you think of him as the closer, but when I was kind of looking at the numbers, it's like, oh, yeah, he was your setup man. I mean, I guess you learned a lot from him a little bit when, you know, him being a closer and then you, you know, in that role.
Yeah, just your approach to the game. He's truly a professional. You know, he's been through those years with the Pirates, the We Are Family Pirates. And I believe he tells the story, too, about he actually pitched, I think it was Tanner was the manager, right?
Chuck Tanner. Chuck Tanner, yeah.
Put him in right field, and I think he said he caught a final out in a World Series game.
Really?
If I can remember correctly, that's how the story goes. I think it was a World Series game, but he went in and then they, you know, they because of him being a sidewinder, left-handers kind of gave him a hard time because they saw the ball so good. coming down from the right side, being low, you know, that low delivery point. And then they would bring a left-hander in to get a lefty out and bring him back in from right field to get a right-hander out.
Huh. And they're just hoping that the ball didn't go to right
when
field.
Back when before they had to face three guys, you know?
Right. Yes. Well, I want to ask you, too. I mean, really, and we love talking to Video Dan and the folks who knew you when you played here, Steve, because it seemed to me you really were one of those bonding guys, you know? You know, like to get the team together, you know, back in the day, you know, Vid was telling us about, you know, just the barbecue. Cues and you know, getting guys together. He also you know, told me and maybe you can elaborate, you know, your first year you got a group of guys together, and like anybody on the team, you called them the Animals, you know. And do you remember?
Oh boy.
do you remember the Animals? You remember doing that?
I sure do. It was a fun time, just trying to get camaraderie. It all started in spring training. We'd take bus rides to go play, you know, away games. And just the guys singing along with each other. And I'll keep it at that, you know, just having fun and just kind of acting crazy. Kind of like they did in Boston. Remember who were the stupid, what do they call themselves? The idiots, right?
Yeah, is that what they were in Boston? Yeah.
You remember that? The Red Sox? They call themselves the idiots or something.
Something like that, yep.
Yeah, we were the Animals, and we did a lot of singing and kind of, you know, just getting fired up for the games. And I'm going to kill Video for telling that story.
Well, we have a couple more, Steve, so get ready.
Uh-oh. Well, and, you know, because we loved Harry Callis, too. And I guess when you got traded, you got a chance to meet and know and love Harry. You know, it would say he'd come into the clubhouse and say, "The Rock." You know,
he did. That was quite an affectionate name, and I got to know Harry pretty well. We had fun on the plane. We played a lot of blackjack, played a lot of cards, and hoot and holler on the planes. And Harry was one of the best, man. I sure do miss him, and one of the greatest people in the game. And I haven't been to the new Philly Stadium, but I did see on TV the other night they showed a close-up shot of Harry, the statue, and just a lot of great memories of Harry and his family and the guys and Wheels and Andy Musser and all those guys, you know, back in those times. And, of course, you know, we would just have fun on the road and on the plane playing cards and you know, that's just a lot of good times, and that's what you got to remember, is those good times with good people.
I have to ask you one question, John. You're going to, because we have to know this. When I was talking to Video Dan, he said Harry used to always call, put A-G-E at the end of our name. So it was Shane Victorino, it was Shaneage, and everything was A-G-E with an A-G-E. Did you start that? Did Harry pick that up from you? You call somebody and then throw an edge at the end of it? I have to know.
I remember saying, I'm not going to take credit okay. If I didn't. I remember I used to do that a lot. Yeah, we did that. That was just one of those things the team
vintage.
Went through.
Harry totally picked up on it, Steve. So for years afterwards, so then we in the office, we're always running around just putting AGE on the end of everybody.
Yeah.
You know, so all right, you had to clear that up for me.
All right. And
I just would say, you know, stuff like Vonage. Or and he would call his son Canage, you know. And just a lot of whatever came to mind, you know. And I might even pick that up at college and brought that over with me, you know. And I used to say that a lot. And let's go have a drinkage, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
You know, just put the A-G-E on anything you want. There's no rhyme or reason, and it's kind of catchy, isn't it?
It is, and we've been doing it for our whole 30-year career here at the Phillies. I mean, and it's like you're the reason, I think.
Yeah.
That is funny. I thought that was long gone and forgotten.
Steve, one of the legendary stories that we've heard over the years – again, I've been with the Phillies 28 years. Tom's been for 32. Video told the story, and I'm going to let you say it.
is when Lee Elia was upset that I guess you guys were on a losing streak and guys in the bullpen were hanging out in Video's room or they're messing around in the clubhouse, and he basically said, he made an ultimatum that you guys cannot be in the, you know, in Video's room, you cannot go into the clubhouse. Do you remember what happened in that story?
I don't.
Okay, well, I'll remind you, then maybe you can pick it up. He said that Lee Elia was just had the, you know what, was very upset. And
yeah.
And he told everyone, you know, I want everyone on the bench or in the bullpen. Nobody hanging out in the clubhouse, and certainly nobody hanging out in Video Dan's room, because I guess, you know, he had the couch there and, you know, people could hang
out.
And
Steve used to go in the second inning and spend a couple innings with Video Dan and hang out in the video room.
So you, I guess the second inning came around and you knocked on the door and Video said, Video locked it. And Video said, Bedrock, I can't let you in.
I remember now.
Yeah, Lee Elia told me I'd get fired if I let you in. So go ahead, take it away.
What did you
do? Here's Johnny.
Yeah. So you came back with an axe, correct?
Yeah, that is correct.
Where did you find the fire? Was there a fire axe hanging somewhere? Where did you get the axe?
There must have been one. Maybe Bushy or Petey had one back there or something. And I found it. Must have been a fire axe or something. Froggy or the ground crew. I might have gone to the ground crew for it. And I came back and Jack Nicholson, to me, you know, I banged on the door. And he would not let us in. He was going to abide by Lee Elia's rules. And I was going to come in here and keep my routine going. And just another way to cut up and have some fun. And those were good times, but I did. I put the Here's Johnny on him, and I don't remember. Did I actually attack the door?
He said you did. Yes.
Yeah,
Video is not one for embellishing.
Stretch. Well, he also mentioned you came up with your own game called Mad Ball. So you opened up the door of the video room, grab a bat and a ball, and just take a swing and hit a ball into the video room, smashing anything.
Mad Ball, yeah. I was bad, wasn't I?
You got it. You know,
I guess that's the way you stay loose.
Yeah, and, you stay loose, right?
We terrorize Video. We go in there, and we go in there and eat and watch the game for a while, and then mosey down the bullpen after a while. And Video was a good source of you know, of course, watching the pitches and hitting. And do you guys remember the David Palmer slide at third base?
Yeah, he totally took a nosedive, right?
He did that video of him sliding where he tripped over his own foot, popped up in the air, and he got to get him to show you sometime. He did it, the music to Dick Van Dyke. And I remember Tony Taylor coming in there watching that, and Tony Taylor was just crying, laughing so hard every time we'd watch it. You watch it 300 times, and we would get a kick out of Tony Taylor watching it and laughing. And Video had a knack of doing great stuff like that. He's talented when it comes to video stuff, and that's why he's been around the Phillies a long time, because he's good at what he does.
You know, and you talked about the year in 1987 where you won the Cy Young. I mean, the relief pitchers really didn't win the Cy Young.
Mm-mm.
So that must have been a real magical season, and obviously you had a long career. And you won a World Series. You're in a World Series. I mean, but 87's got to be a special year for you.
Yeah, it was. You know, I never expected it. Of course, relievers did not win it very much. I think Mark Davis might have won it a couple years later as a Padre or a Royal. I can't remember. And you know, just like I said, I started slow that year too. I was like 1-3 with almost a 9 ERA at the end of May. Things weren't going good. And about to roll over to June, and I remember coming in for a save, and I was getting booed. I wasn't doing the job, and I think I had a one-run lead, got a line drive hit to left field, I think either Gary Reedus or Jeff Stone. I can't remember who was playing left field that day. Caught the ball, was hit right to him, just a bullet into the game, and that just seemed to give me some confidence, and things started rolling. Again, Teak was the man. He was doing his job. The starters were getting us to the sixth, seventh, eighth, and the setup guys and the relief corps were doing a great job. And they just put me in a position to rack up some saves. And you know, towards the end, reporters started talking about it, and I was kind of just wanted to, you know, focus on what I'm doing. Keep doing the, you know, the job. Keep knocking down video's door with an axe, stuff like that.
Keep loose.
And you know, it just come November, I got the call, and it was very close. I think closest voting ever. Rick Rushell was right there. Shane Raleigh had 16 or 17 wins, and you know, got the call, and I had won it, and I'm, you know, very appreciative. I'm very thankful for my teammates for putting me in that position. And, you know, did Schmitty win the MVP that year, too?
Did he win the MVP in 87? I'm not sure. Was that 86? I'm not sure.
It might have been. It was close. It was right in that same area. But he was playing at the peak of his game. And it was just a pleasure to be with those guys. You know, I got to see Lefty and Schmitty play, and boy, it was a real treat, you know, after, you know, getting to play with guys like Dale Murphy with the Braves and Phil Niekro, and of course went on to Minnesota in that 91 World Series playing with Kirby Puckett. And I'm just so appreciative to play with guys like that really, you know, knew how to play the game and were at the highest level playing that you could possibly get, and they were just good people too, and that's what's important.
You know, and I guess your bread and butter was the fastball. We love Sarge. Gary Matthews is one of our favorites, and he said that it was the only time when he faced you that he never saw the ball. you know, and Sarge is a great hitter, but what do you think of today's pitchers? It seems like every guy they bring in is throwing in the mid-90s or touching 100.
You are exactly right. I'm just going to tell it like it is. Back in the day, if you were 95, you were a legit hard thrower. Mm. There was only a handful of people, Lee Smith and there's others. I just can't recall them right now. But now everybody's 95, 97, 100. And that was unheard of back then. But guys are bigger, faster, stronger. The guys, the hitters are bigger, faster, stronger. They're staying prepared year round. And it's just the game's got a lot faster. Everybody down in that Philly bullpen, you know, is pretty much throws gas. Cam used to. He used to be in the high 90s. He got that blood clot in his shoulder 4 or 5 years ago, and it kind of took a toll. So he's had to learn, adapt on the fly how to get hitters out. And I admire him for doing that, because a lot of guys that, you know, they'd be out of the game. And when you lose your velocity, you got to figure things out quick. Because if when you throw 97, 98, 99, not that those hitters can't turn that around, but it's a little bit more forgiving when you miss than when you miss 91, 93, 94. Those guys don't miss that a whole lot.
Yeah. Mm.
So, you know, again, a lot of guys are stronger. They're throwing harder. And it's just the way the game's evolved.
So, Steve, after the Phillies, you got traded to the Giants in 89. If everyone remembers, that was the Earthquake series, right? So talk about that.
That is correct.
That must have been a crazy experience.
Traded, like I said. I'm sorry?
No, I said that must have been a crazy experience, that whole Earthquake situation.
It was. I had just signed a 3-year deal with the Phillies, and we knew that if things didn't get going and we weren't scoring and winning games, and I was sitting down there, idle and not coming in games closing, and they said there's a possibility that you could be traded, and I accepted that. I understand that's the business of the game. And sure enough, in Philly that year, we kind of struggled out of the gate, and the rumor started flying. As a matter of fact, I had a sheepdog named Rumor. Mm-hmm. And they said Kansas City, then it was Boston maybe, then San Fran, and it sure was Colton. They came down and got me in the seventh inning of one game and called me and said, you've been traded to the Giants. So we headed west and went on to played with guys like Goose Gossage and Will Clark and Matt Williams, Kevin Mitchell, Robbie Thompson, Terry Kennedy behind the plate, Bob Brenly, and went to the World Series and faced a monster team in the Oakland A's, and we got swept 4 straight. But game 3, the earthquake hit. We're right in front of the dugout getting ready to do the anthem. the Atlin boys were about to sing the national anthem, and we started rolling and swaying. I'm, you know, being a New England boy, we're not real familiar with earthquakes. Yeah. And I thought it was more of a shaky thing, but it's more of a rolling effect. We're, whoa, what was that? And then the chair went up, lights went out, and everybody's kind of seeing what happened. And it was a pretty good one, too. I think 7-2 or 7-3. Yeah. And then the report started coming in of the marina on fire, and the Al Rosen was our general manager, former MVP, and he lived in that marina district down there, and it was on fire burning, and I think he lost everything in that fire.
Wow.
And then the Bay Bridge collapsing, that 880, which was the double highway, one on top of the other, it collapsed, and so we shut it down for 12 days, and we kind of had some workouts when we could, helped the Red Cross with people. You know, their mind was not on baseball right then. So about 12:30, we were down 2-0, and they came back with Stewart again, and we lost game three. We never did get off the mat. We lost in four, and everybody's like, let's get out of here, you know. It just wasn't a good experience, and it was something to go through. I had my family in the stands, and all the kids were underneath, and the power went out, and there was gas pipes, and you know, guys were walking in the locker room to light a lighter to see what what's going on, and just scream and put that out because there's still gas lines everywhere, you know. And all my family, I had friends fly out from Boston area, and they were all, you know, what was normally a 20-minute ride down to Foster City, just south of the airport, was 3 hours because it was just gridlock. And if you missed an exit, it was like 6 hours to go one exit back again. And so they hung, though. All my buddies and family hung for the 12 days and stayed for games 3 and 4. Like I said, we never got it going, but it was an experience.
Mm. And then 2 years later, you win the World Series with the Twins. I guess this is the 30th anniversary. Did they do anything in Minnesota this year to kind of remember that 30th anniversary? I don't know.
They did. And, 30 years ago, 1991, we played the Braves. And being a member of that Twins team, you know, some great players on that team, with Kirby Puckett, and Herbeck, Dan Gladden. Just a lot of good players, and fortunate to be on that team. Rick Aguilera was the closer. I was kind of waning years of my career. I was a setup guy, or I pitched sixth, seventh, but got to pitch at Fenway one game and got a win there, and that was a kind of a high point of that year. Always wanted to play for the Red Sox if I could, but it didn't happen. But got to pitch in Fenway. And came in, and let me see, we took the lead, and then I came in for another inning, and I gave up a leadoff double to Ellis Burks. You remember him?
Yeah, yep. Sure.
And I was in trouble early, nobody out, man, on second, and I stranded him and got the win. So that my only game in Fenway, I picked up a W, and I was fortunate for that.
Beautiful. And Minnesota's a good baseball town. I mean, when you won the World Series, I mean, the place went crazy.
Yeah, sure did. It was loud in there, too. You know, they had won it in 87, not too many years before that, and very, very loud in that dome. You know, the baggy in right field and all that.
Sure.
And it was really loud. And, you know, there was some controversy with the play at first base with Ron Gant. There was a play over there, a pickoff, and they thought Herbeck had nudged Gant to lose his balance, and they called him out, and you know, we got through that, but it was a great series, went 7 games, and fortunately we played 4 at home, and final game, 10 innings, Jack Morris versus John Smoltz, 1-0 game. Morris goes the distance. I must have warmed up 8 times that game, but he went 10, and then we won it 1-0, and certainly could have gone either way.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. Morris, he was lights out. Lights out.
Oh, my gosh. He was studly. We had some good stars. Kevin Tappany and Scott Erickson, Morris, probably forgetting somebody over the year. But, it was just a good year, and we had a lot of fun that year, too. And So then I had a finger injury, and I retired in 92. I didn't play, but then it got better, and I called Leo Mazzoni, my former pitching coach in the minor leagues with the Braves, and he in turn called Bobby and John Schoholtz, and they gave me a shot at trying out for the Braves, and I went down and made the team and got three more years in 93, 4, and 5, and then retired in 95.
And they weren't too angry that you had beat them in 91 in the World Series. They brought you back.
Yeah, I guess not, or they wouldn't have brought me back. Right. Huh? So, they're a class organization, and it was a pleasure to play with them. And, I came up with them, drafted by them, and again, back in 78, came through there. And they just have, they had that run at 14 years in a row, with those horses of Maddox, Glavin, Smoltz, and it could have been either Pete Smith, Steve Avery, and just really, really good starting pitchers. I was like the low man on the totem pole in the bullpen. I was probably the last guy, so I didn't pitch, but every couple weeks. I had to try and stay sharp because those guys were going 7, 8, 9 every night,
Yeah, that's impressive.
They just rode them for 14 years, and of course they won it in 95, and they're back to being good again, and this is starting tonight. It's going to be a good series, and I know the Phils and Braves will be battling again.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. John, you're ready over there? Okay, so Steve, I don't know if you know this, but John always administers a quiz to our guest.
It's about your life.
It's about your life.
Inside chance of getting this, since it involves a lot of different things of every aspect of your life. So 8 quick questions, multiple choice. The bar that we set is usually you just have to get 6 out of 8. And being that you're being interviewed by the best friend of the Fanatic, Tom, I'm sure you're going to send him something Fanatic related, like a Fanatic hat. We'll have Debbie DeCito send it out.
Yeah, Debbie, because I'm sure Steve had a Fanatic doll when he was playing here, and I'm sure it's all worn out. So maybe he needs a new Fanatic doll.
All right.
Well, let me give you this story. We just had a grandbaby.
There you go.
I told Debbie, and Debbie had sent a Fanatic doll and the coloring book. And that's his first gift to the baby.
That's some good grandparenting right there, Steve. Yeah, nice work by you.
Well, Debbie. Debbie's the best, and she took care of us, and we're so proud of that new baby.
Awesome.
And go ahead. Let's go with the quiz.
All right, here we go.
Number one, you went to, I'm probably going to butcher the name of it, but Methuen High School? Methuen High School in Massachusetts. So which of these celebrities did not go to that high school? Which of these, I'm going to mention 4 celebrities. One did not go to that high school, okay? A is Susie Castillo, Miss USA 2003. Gary McLean, who everyone in Philadelphia knows, former Villanova basketball star. Soupy Sales, Match Game 76 celeb. Or Amanda Conway, who played professional ice hockey for the Connecticut Whale. So was it Miss USA, Villanova basketball star, Match Game 76, Soupy Sales, or a female professional ice hockey player?
I'm going to go with Soupy Sales.
Soupy Sales is correct. We always have a Match Game 76 person on there, so yes. All right, number two. I think Tom mentioned you went to the University of New Haven. Which of these celebrities did not go there to the University of New Haven? A is actress Betty White from Golden Girls. B is Dean Lombardi, former GM of the LA Kings. C is Tony Sperano, who was a former head coach of the Raiders and the Dolphins. And D is former Major League Baseball pitcher and pitching coach Dave Wallace.
I know it's Wallace that went there. I know he went there. I'm going to go with the great Betty White.
Betty White is correct.
I was hoping Betty White went to your college.
Here's Johnny.
Yes, you're 2 for 2. All right, your first professional team was the Greenwood Braves in 1978. Which of these people was not a teammate of that team? So you're going to way back in the time machine. Which was not a teammate on the Greenwood Braves? Bob Porter, Mo Mason, Brian Snitker, Joe Cowley.
Oh, that's easy.
What do you got?
Double M, Mo Mason.
Mo Mason. Now, Mo Mason is short for Maureen Mason, who's actually a female who is our friend at CHOP here in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Children's Hospital. So she's an avid listener, so I figured I'd throw her name in there. But you are correct. You are 3 for 3.
You're on a roll.
I remember those other three very well.
All right. You are of Armenian descent, right? So which of these celebrities is not of Armenian descent? Okay. We have Cher, who's born Sherilyn Sarkeesian, Andre Agassi, Kim Kardashian, or Gene Simmons of Kiss.
Oh, I'm gonna say easy, but it's got to be Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons is correct. He was born as Haim Witz was his name. So yes, you got that right. 4 for 4, Tom. How about that?
Cy Young Award winner.
Wow. All right.
Put that fanatic doll in the mail.
Wow. Still got a little work to do. In 1987, you won this, as we mentioned, at NL Cy Young. Three other relievers have won the Cy Young. Which one is not the Cy Young winner, okay? Was it Trevor Hoffman, Mark Davis, Dennis Eckersley, Eric Gagne?
Davis was. Gagne was.
So then it's between Eckersley and Hoffman.
I think as many saves. Eckersley was at my Boston Writers Banquet when I accepted the award. And as many saves as Hoffman had, I don't think he won it. I'm going Trevor Hoffman.
You are correct. 5 for 5. Wow. All right. All right. Now you got one more to qualify for Fanatic Doll, but then you really got to go undefeated at this point. Question number 6. In 1987, your big year, who was second in home runs for the Phillies behind Mike Schmidt? Who was second in home runs for the Phillies in 1987 behind Mike Schmidt? Was it Von Hayes, Juan Samuel, Lance Parrish, or Chris James? Von Hayes, Juan Samuel, Lance Parrish, and Chris James. This person had 28 home runs that year.
Great question. Wow. I don't think it was Parrish. Chris James had a good year. Samuel had a good year. And who was the other one?
Von Hayes.
Von Hayes. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I'm gonna have to pick one.
Yep.
I don't know for sure. I'm gonna go with Von Hayes.
Oh, that's what Tom said, but no, it was Juan Samuel. Sammy had 28.
28 home runs for Sammy that year, huh?
28 home runs.
Wow.
He was also a teammate of mine in the All-Star game. He played second base and out in Oakland.
Well, he's one of our favorite people. So, all right, you got two more. Okay. So obviously you won a World Series in 1991. Which teammate on the Twins that year never played for the Phillies? Okay. So three of these teammates played for the Phillies at one point. One did not. Okay. So Paul Abbott, Tom Edens, David West, Mark Guthrie.
You know, Guthrie's kid plays for the Phillies organization. Tom Eden, I'm not sure. Say the other two, Eden, Guthrie, Abbott, and who's the other one?
And David West.
David West, big lefty. You pick him again. I'm going to go David West.
No, it was Mark Guthrie.
It was Guthrie.
Guthrie. All right, now I'm going to give you the biggest layup for the last question.
Yeah, you're going to get this one.
You're going to get this one. Now, we were told that you're a big Three Stooges fan. Okay,
I am.
So which of these characters, but it's really the real-life actor, was born in South Philly? The three other guys were born in New York. One guy was born in South Philly. In fact, there's a mural in South Philly with this guy's name on it and a whole mural of him. So was it Mo, Shemp, Larry, or Curly?
I don't know why Mo's standing out. I'm going to go Mo.
No, Mo and Shemp were brothers, right?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, they were. I knew that.
They were.
And I think they're from Bensonhurst, New York. And I think Curly was also from New York, but Larry Fine was in South Philly. All right, I'll give you another chance because there was another Three Stooges question I was going to ask.
What is it?
Is what song was played when Curly boxed?
Um, 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 uh,
You got it. You got it.
Pop goes the weasel.
Tom, we'll give him extra credit for that one.
I was thinking Three Blind Mice, but that's the song, the Stooges song.
Pop goes the weasel. Larry had to go running down the street to find when the radio broke. He had to go down the street and he drove the truck through the wall to play it.
Pop goes the weasel.
You know, Steve, the next time you're in Philadelphia, we got to go to the You, Me, Vidya, Dan, and Brage. We'll go to the Three Stooges Museum. It's located in the suburbs of Philadelphia. It's about a half-hour ride from the ballpark. And I would love that. Oh, my gosh. I've been to this place. This is serious. I mean, there is so much memorabilia, and it's not a big museum, but it's awesome. Yeah.
You know what? I should have guessed Larry, too. I knew those other guys were brothers, and I think I knew they were from New York, but I couldn't remember. And, now that I say that, but, makes sense. Larry's from Philly.
But you still won the Fanatic doll.
Yeah, you got Pop Goes the Weasel. That was even more obscure.
He's going to throw in an autographed Fanatic book for your grandchild.
You guys are the greatest. Man, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks,
all right,
Steve.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
All right, go Phils.
Go Phils. All right, thanks, Steve. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Well, how exciting was that, huh, John? We were told, first of all, I mean, Video Dan says Steve Bedrosian is by far the funniest guy who's ever played for the Phillies. And he said Crux said the same thing. Crux said out of all the guys he's ever played with,
right.
Steve
and Bedrosian, he played with a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's coming from Crux that Steve Bedrosian was the funniest guy,
Well, obviously he loved the Three Stooges, right?
Yeah, so there you go.
Says it all right there. And he knows of the Three Stooges. Well, he didn't know Larry Fine.
I just love to, that he's just one of those guys. I say bonding guys. There's always a few guys who just want to get the team together,
yep.
Includes everybody, and, it seems like just
well, especially
great
a closer.
Guy.
You
great
need
guy.
That closer to be kind of the goofy, kind of not goofy, but just,
and
what I mean?
Nuts, too.
Nuts.
He sounded a little nuts. I mean,
in a fun way.
Apparently, there was a legendary food fight back in the spring of '86 in the Sheraton Sand Key during spring training that, we forgot to ask him about it.
Right.
But, they had a lot of fun back in those years.
Yes, they did.
All right, so that's it, John?
Yep, that's it.
All right, I know we're working on some other guests.
This is the last regular season podcast.
Correct. We hope we're going to have a playoff version
we
podcast.
Hope so. We hope so.
And we really thank everybody for tuning in out there. And I guess we'll be back another time, right, John?
That's right.
All right, thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll catch you next time on Philly's Backstage.